Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls. I'm Cass.
I'm Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And today is our very first episode of our newest series, Goodish Book Club. Yay! Woohoo! Welcome, welcome, welcome. Okay. In this series, we will feature discussions on characters, places, and of course, theories. But we'll also have an open window discussion where each of us get to talk about whatever we want. This also allows each of us to share our own POVs and hopefully relate or create some discussions with all of you in our comments. So each book club series will be about 2 to 3 episodes for quick listening, but packed full of fun bookish discussion. And it'll be a little more laid back than our deep dive series. So this is a no spoiler series. Again, no spoilers, because we are all three reading each section of the book for the very first time along with each and every one of you. For our first book club, we are covering Rachel Gillig's One Dark Window, which is very popular right now. So we decided to try it out. And today's episode is going to be discussing only part one, which is chapters 1-14. So if you haven't gotten that far, you should get that far and stop listening. In One Dark Window, there are Providence cards that are collected like Pokemon cards. You gotta catch them all. With the buzz of the newest Pokemon game, because I am a huge nerd, I have decided that we are going to start this episode today with naming our favorite Pokemon. But in the next 2 episodes, we will be choosing starters for some of the more important characters. And for those of you that don't know what that means, when you start a Pokemon game, you have to choose a starter. Each new game comes out with new starters. So with each new episode, we're going to take a character that we really like and have to pick their starter of what we think they would choose. But for today, our favorite Pokemon. For me, my favorite Pokemon is Eevee.
Oh, fuck.
And it is because there's so many Eeveelutions, which I knew Dallas was going to say Eevee because her daughter's name is Evie.
It is.
And she likes Eevee.
She does like Eevee.
They have persuaded her daughter in some small way.
Okay. I have other Pokemons, too, that I also like.
Okay.
Tell us why you like Eevee.
I like Eevee because she has quite a few Eeveelutions. So you can catch an Eevee, and then it doesn't stay Eevee. You can make it whatever you want, whatever type you want. My all-time favorite Eeveelution is Umbreon, but my second favorite is Vaporeon, and he's actually hanging up in my son's room because...
That's cute.
Yeah. If you didn't know, we were all 3 dolphin trainers once in our life, so I love the ocean very much, and Vaporeon is very fun. Dallas,
I'm gonna be
you
honest.
Like to go?
Yeah, my daughter knows 100 times more about Pokemon than I do. I only know old school Pokemons. I don't know any new Pokemon. I didn't know they were making new Pokemon.
Okay.
So I'm sticking with the classics. If it's not Eevee, it is Mewtwo.
I love Mew.
I like his little hands. They're very cute.
I do love Mew.
I'm like, if you gave a grandma a Pokemon card and she's like, I like his ears. They're very nice.
Whenever I was little, I would play the Pokemon Stadium game on my N64. And for whatever reason, my papa on my mom's side was obsessed with Muk. Like, that was his go-to. He's like, I like this guy. I'm like,
In high school, I chose Lillipup only because it looks like a little Yorkie.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a great Pokemon. And they were like, no, it's not. And I was like, it's fine. He's cute.
Mewtwo is a pretty powerful one, though.
Mewtwo is very powerful, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch Detective Pikachu?
No, if that's a test, I didn't pass.
It's the live action one that came out with the Pokemon and Ryan Reynolds. Mewtwo is the quote bad guy of that one.
I like that he has a judgy face because I can relate.
Mewtwo always be judging.
Same. I always be judging. Always.
We know. Cute snake face.
You know, I actually, there's two versions for that now. There's snake face, yes, but I also will accept judgmental shoelace because it's a very small vine snake.
That's true.
So for those who don't know what we're talking about, if you are new to our show, welcome. I can control my words and actions, but unfortunately, I cannot control the expressions that are on my face. So my all thoughts are plastered right on the front. And we call it snake face because I get very squinty eyes. And there is a snake called a vine snake. And it's very small. And it also is very squinty. And we'll put a picture of it up for you right now.
And this is me. It looks just like Dallas. It looks just like her.
We're twins. It's honestly my spirit animal. That and Mewtwo, I guess. He looks very judgy. I can see myself making that face.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mads. Madison. Tell me your Pokemon.
That's hard. I don't know. I was just very much like water type. Like, it didn't matter what game came out. I was like water type. But I feel like if I had to choose a favorite, I want to say Squirtle, but specifically the one that was obsessed with wearing the sunglasses.
That's fair. Squirtle's a good one. He's
a classic guy.
Yeah.
Water type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do love Squirtle.
Of the classics, I was not a Charizard.
I never got the hype.
He was kind of cliche.
I know.
There was even someone I used to watch on YouTube. They went into the trading card thing whenever it started picking back up right after the pandemic. And like, I guess Charizard's the big thing. But whenever I was little, I was like flipping through because I still have all my old cards and I have like a stack this thick of Meowth cards. Not even my favorite, but for whatever reason, I loved collecting Meowth cards.
I just looked him up. I love that little guy. I was like,
I figured you would.
I was like, go to Google. I like that little guy.
Yeah.
He's very cute.
He's a classic too. All right.
Let's do this.
Are we ready?
I'm ready.
To get into this? All right. So we are going to start with some character discussion. But the fun thing about book club is there's not really any rhyme or reason, right? We're like not deep diving, so we can kind of discuss whatever we feel like. So each of us decided to take a section that we think we would like to chat about, and then we'll get to our open window discussion, and then we'll finish with theories so that we can be thinking forward for our next part of the book. Mads, would you like to take it away?
1 through 14, we were introduced to a lot of people, and my thing is I get names wrong, so buckle up.
She's going to get them all right today, all on her own.
There's like some names where I'm like, oh, I got this. And then I think about halfway through part one, I was like, maybe I'm wrong. But we're going to find out because you both did the audiobook.
I'm not correcting you.
Yeah.
You won't know.
The audiobook makes it a lot easier. But I will say going into this, like typing it, I was spelling these people's names however I wanted to. And then I looked at the regular book and I was like, who is she talking about?
Yeah.
And I had to match it to be like, that's
who she
means.
That was me with Quicksilver.
I feel like some of these are a little harder than Quicksilver.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah, for me, it was mostly places in Quicksilver. Yeah. I was like, who? Huh?
That's fair. That's fair.
Kick it all off. We have our main girl, Beth.
Yeah. Good job, Madison. Okay. Congratulations.
That's a big word for Elmo. So we have Elspeth, who is our main character. She's interesting. Her whole entire story, starting off first chapter, strong. Whenever we are introduced to her and her aunt, and she was like, yeah, I was sleeping at the window like a cat. And the next thing I know, I'm gently pushed. But then she says the next moment she hits her head on a rock and her head's bleeding. I was like, are you sure you were gently pushed? Because me, I'm just like, imagine like, go to the wood. I'm just like.
Yeah, it starts off a little crazy. I had to listen back through actually a couple times because I was like, what is going on? I'm still confused.
Yes. So the beginning, we meet our main female character, her aunt, and then also the physicians, which to me, I mean, they're described as wearing white robes, but I just think of like the witch doctor masks. I don't know if it says that they wear masks, but in my head, they're wearing masks and they just look creepy, but I don't think they're wearing masks.
You know what it makes me think of? Which I am terrified of E.T. for anybody who doesn't know that. But in the end of E.T., the scientists are looking for him and they're trying to find him and get him. And they all wear white, like big hazmat suits. So that's all I could think of, which I figure these guys are probably in like fancier looking outfits, but I'm like, oh no, here they come.
Interesting. Yeah, so we have our main character. We have who I think right now is my favorite character is the Nightmare, because we don't know who he is, what he is. But in my head, homeboy is sassy and I love it. And I feel like him and Taryn would get along. Like, I have some notes on my Kindle highlighted that I will be bringing up. Buckle up for that. But I love the nightmare. I don't know what he is. But like, at first I thought he was just like some sort of shadow. But then he gets all of these personified traits and like is even described as having like claws and fur. And so I was like, maybe you've got a whole nother Bryaxis situation on our hands. Except the nightmare is a guy and Bryaxis is a lady.
Says the queen herself.
And then I think next we have who I believe is going to be Cass's favorite character. And that is Raven, who at first whenever I was reading, I was like, Raven. And then for whatever reason, my head was like, what if it's something weird like Ravine?
See, you know, that's why I can't read the book. Because I make up crazy names.
So Raven is a very important character that we all need to keep our eyes on. And he comes from a royal family line. He's not line for the throne, but his mom is the sister to the king, who is King Rowan. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gets confusing in itself because, like, he has a name. I'm not going to say it because I don't know how to say it and I'm not going to put myself out there. But he's always referred to as, like, King Rowan or the Rowan King. And it's just, it's interesting. Their whole family line is interesting. But under King Rowan, you have his firstborn, who is Hoth Rowan. Not a good guy. We kind of only meet him once. And then he has his brother, Elm. And Elm, to be determined. I don't know how I feel about him.
He's sus. I can't catch his vibe because sometimes I like him. And sometimes I'm like, I don't trust you.
Yeah. In the beginning, I was like, I don't like you. In the beginning, you're not my friend. But like kind of towards the end of part one, I was like, maybe you're cool, but I still don't trust you. You're not holding my drink at the party.
Don't even look at my drink, bro.
Raven can hold my drink. Elm, you're on probation. I believe that's the last direct person with King Rowan. And so in that family, you have Moret, her husband. Don't really need to know his name at the moment. Raven. And then you have, is Emery his cousin or his brother? That's his little brother.
Emery's his youngest brother.
Youngest brother. Also, speaking of Pokemon, because whenever I proposed that idea to you, and I was like at first thinking of just like what Pokemon reminds me of just a character. Mm-hmm. Do you remember there was like an episode where I think like either Ash caught or was in the process of like trying to catch Ambipom, the little purple monkey with the hand?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that thing was like just all over the place, like not listening to no one. I was like, that's Emery right
there.
That's
Emery. That's fair. Emery's going to be hard if we chose him for the next episode to choose his starter.
Mm-hmm. No.
He's like, I collect the crazy ass ones that are way out there doing crazy things.
He would have a Mr. Mime for sure.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I hate those Pokemon.
Who else? I believe that's all you family.
Jesper.
Yes. Right now, I'm rocking with Jesper. Right now, me and Jesper, we're buddies.
I trust her.
I trust her. I have a theory for who I think could betray. I feel like there's going to be betrayal by the end of the book. I'll discuss that later. If Jesper is a betrayer, it's going to hurt my feelings, but that's not who I think it is.
You know who I think's going to betray?
Who?
I don't know. You're going to have to wait and find out.
Wow.
Why? I'm just kidding. I think Ione is going to be.
Who?
Ione.
That's how you say her name?
Sure.
I called her Ione.
No, I think they pronounce the E.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because she has a maiden card, but we'll talk about that later, too.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about Ione. I'm going to call her Ione. I'm speaking my truth. She's Ione.
You're like, actually?
Actually,
I'm going to say her name how I want to.
I kind of think, so she's not who I originally thought was going to be a betrayer, but I could see her betraying Elspeth. For sure, especially like with the maiden card. Also, Elspeth has two half twin sisters and an estranged stepmom. It feels almost like trying
Cinderella.
To be like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I feel that.
And then we have her dad. How do you say his name?
Who's dad? Eric?
Elspeth.
Eric Spindle. Yeah, Eric is your dad.
I was looking at her uncle.
Ione's dad. They only say his name like once, and it's when they announce him at the end.
Yeah, other than that, he's just like the
uncle. Or giving his card. Yeah.
The uncle, I also don't trust.
Well, absolutely not. Not after the stunt he pulled.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he died. It needs to happen, I feel like.
Yeah.
But Eric Spindle, I know he's on thin ice for me. Like, thank you for not turning your daughter in to the physicians, but I'm just like, bruh, do better.
Yeah, thanks for doing the bare minimum, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks for not having me, like, executed.
Thanks for being a decent parent.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Literally.
I think the last person who's, like, not really important, but he's a funny guy to have around, and that's going to be Alex Laburnum.
Ugh.
LOL.
He's funny just because I know Alex's. I have interacted with Alex's, or I'm just like...
They're cringy.
Unintentionally cringy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They're always, like, super nice.
Mm-hmm. No.
But you're like...
I always attract Alex's, and I'm just like, I'm not afraid to hurt your feelings. You need to stop.
Tell them, girl. They need it. Yeah. Have a seat, buddy. I don't... They... It's the lack of confidence.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well... He does pull it out for a second, but you know who's more confident? Raven.
I mean, does he actually? I don't feel like he
There's
did.
Like, I wouldn't say it's confidence. I would say cockiness.
Where he's like, I don't even actually, know if I
asked your dad, and he said it was okay.
Literally. I think it was like, well, mom said that I could, so I'm right here, you know? And then Big Brother's like,
Your dad said that you could sit with me, actually.
Right. It wasn't confidence.
And Raven's like, shut the fuck up.
It was like weird parental justification.
That's because he's an Alex.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that as an insult. You're just an Alex.
Mm-hmm. Used Ken as an insult multiple times. I mean, I love Ken, but like even at one place I worked, I had someone who was like grade A mansplainer. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, Ken, calm down.
I love it. He thought
he was like, but he was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm Ken. I'm like, did you watch the movie? It's hi, Barbie, and then hi, Ken. Yeah, I feel like for part one, the characters are kind of overwhelming. Like, I was really this close to building a graphic of, like, just character family lines.
Yeah,
because I almost did that for us.
Because
I almost
like,
made family trees and how they connected.
Again?
You should.
Right now we have 16 people written down. That's a lot.
17, 18, plus the two I forgot. So 18 that are formally introduced.
I don't know. Maybe it was just me. I felt like when I was reading in my brain, we were walking around the castle. Right, we're walking around, walking up the stairs. But then all of a sudden, it was like, and the guards are on horses. I couldn't figure out if they were inside or outside. I was like, where are you?
We'll also say, I don't have the physical book, and I always do audiobooks. Is there a map in the book?
I did my Kindle. I did Kindle half audiobook.
I was about to say, my Kindle took me to page or chapter one.
Look, I'm just going to grab two Twisted Crowns.
I'd be like, whose house are we in? What are we doing here?
With like a little bit of the character dynamics and the meeting in secret places, if you like how things are going so far, it reminds me a lot of The Cruel Prince, my little promo.
That's fair. Yeah. Rachel Gillig, it'd be really great to have a map. A map would be nice. A map would help people like me figure out what the heck you're talking about. Because in my mind, now they're just in little boxes where I'm like, oh, now they're in a box outside.
Now
they're in a secret box.
Secret box.
Nobody knows where this box is. Now we're in a castle. Can't tell you whose, but we're in there. So.
Yeah. No map. You just gotta envision it with your brain.
I can't do that. You know I have that thing.
You do have
that thing.
Where she can't envision anything.
I can't see anything in my brain. It's all black.
Really? That's so sad.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's really sad.
That's what I said the first time she told me.
When I tried to start meditation and things and they'd be like, imagine. I'd be like, no. I just see a black roof all the time. That sounds nice, but
so
I can't see that.
Wait, so then how do you dream? Do you dream?
I do dream.
Hmm.
Yes.
Interesting.
But I can never pull things in my head like my dreams. Or like if I'm laying in bed at night with my eyes closed and like people used to do... Where you, like, control your dreams. They'd be, like, go through images that you want to see in your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, talk about it in your own head.
Interesting.
And I'd be like, I can't do that. Do you know how many times in my head I'd be like, Harry Styles, Harry Styles, Harry Styles.
I have done that
before. And he never shows up. So
sad.
Speaking of places, let's get into it. There's a few different places we're introduced to. Like we just talked about, it's kind of difficult when you can't imagine it, like myself. So I listed each place. We are in a mist-shrouded kingdom of Blunder. That's the main setting. The key places of part one is the village of Bernouri. Ooh, I don't think I said that right. That's where the story begins, where they're just like walking through. I don't remember it ever being mentioned again. I just assume maybe we're in there. But then we also have the capital city, Stone, which is where the Rowan King resides. And I feel like the rest of this takes place a lot in that city. You also have the Spindle House. That's where Elspeth's father, evil stepmother, and stepsisters reside. She does not live there. She grew up in Hawthorne Estate, and that is where her aunt, uncle, and Ione live. She's been there since she got her infection. There are the Forest Roads, which is a very key meeting spot of the cloaked men that are looking for cards. Wink, wink. And then in Stone, the capital city, you have a couple different castles. There is a Yew family castle, which is Raven's family castle. But then he also has places to live within the Rowan King's castle. So that kind of confuses me sometimes because they talk about going to his chambers or to his home or things like that. And it kind of ping-pongs back and forth between being his personal space within the King's castle and then it being his family's castle. The Great Hall is where we meet a lot of the characters, especially during Equinox and some of the other meetings. We meet the Rowans, the Yews, and everybody's favorite Alex. And then the Cellar is a reoccurring secret meeting place for the Yews, where they tend to go back to when they have secret things to chat about. But I will say it's still a jumbled mess in my head.
Plus, you just have the nightmare, like just reiterating their big book of what they follow and read as they grow up. So I'm just like, thank you for refreshing my memory.
Yes. Yeah. I will say the way that she has written the nightmare, I probably wouldn't get through this. And that kind of leads me into my next section, which I'm going to bring up the Providence cards just so that we have them as a reference. We're not going to go super in depth. I'm just going to name each one, what it gives the person who holds the card, and then kind of who we know at this point has them. But if it was not for the nightmare, I wouldn't know any of this. I was not catching on to it until he was like, hey, hello, this is what you're supposed to get out of it. And I was like, oh, yes. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate you. So, there is a deck of Providence cards. If you collect the entire deck, you can take away the mist and take away the infection. Each card goes down from 12 to 1. So number 12 is the Black Horse that gives you Master of Combat. There are 12 of them, and each Destrier holds one. But there's 13 Destriers for the king, and Raven is a part of that. We find out that Raven cannot use all of the cards. That's part of his magic from his infection. So he doesn't hold one. The Golden Egg, there's 11 of them. They give you great wealth. The Prophet, there's 10 of them. Those give you glimpses into the future. The White Eagle, there's 9 of them. They bestow courage. We saw those with the two guards that were trying to capture Emery. And then Raven takes them. Also cards he cannot use. The Maiden, there's 8 of them. They give you great beauty. We know Ione holds this card now that she is going to be betrothed to Hoth. But we also know that there are other people at the Equinox that have them because Elspeth talks about seeing their pink glowing. You have the Chalice. There's 7 of them that turns any liquid into truth serum. And Jesper holds one of those. You have the Well. There's 6 of them. Clear sight to recognize your enemies. The Iron Gate. There's 5 of them. They give blissful serenity no matter the struggle. You have the Scythe. There's 4. Power to control others. Elm holds this card. It cannot be used on Elspeth if the nightmare is helping her. The Mirror, there's 3 of them. Invisibility and seeing the dead. Raven holds one of these. He uses it at the Equinox, and Elspeth is absolutely terrified of this card. That's what we know about it. The Nightmare, there's 2 of them. Be wary the dark. Be wary the fright. Be wary the voices that come in the night. They speak into others' minds. King Rowan now holds one. Thanks a lot, Uncle Hawthorne. And Raven holds the other. And of course, the nightmare lives in Elspeth's mind. And then you have the twin Alders, which is the one and only card, the number one card that everybody needs. And it's written that I'll pay any cost for the 12th card. I said, I woke up in the chamber, the Twin Alders card there. And so my dear kingdom, my blunder, my land, the cards fall to you, paid by my hand. I created 12 cards, but I cannot use one. And that comes from the Book of Alders. This gives you the power to commune with the blunder's ancient entity, the spirit of the wood. Everybody wants this card. This is the most important card. And we know at the end of part one, the U's still need the Well, the Iron Gate, and the Twin Alders to be able to complete their deck and to be able to save Emery, to save Elspeth, to save Raven, and to get the Mist out of Blunder. So that is a quick review of the Providence cards. And honestly, all those descriptions I pulled came straight from the Nightmare himself. So thank you, sir. But let's get into our open window discussion. Alice, do you want to start this one?
As far as open discussion, I don't have a ton because we are still like very new into the book. There was a lot of world building that I think definitely took some time to let that like sink in. There's a lot of characters, a lot of places, things like that. But I do have a couple comments, at least. So as for Madison as well, my love for the Nightmare runs very deep. It's giving Venom, like the character, and I am 100% here for it. I love that it has thoughts and things to say. I love their relationship between the Nightmare and Elspeth. I feel like she's so alone. And I think that if she would not have had the Nightmare the last 11 years, I think it would have been really rough, like even more rough than it already was, right? Like she lost her mom. Her mom died. Her dad is mid. He doesn't really do a lot. Her stepmom sucks. Like, can you imagine? Like she has Ione, but also not really, right? Ione has never had the infection, anything like that. So who really can she relate to? So I feel like the Nightmare has been there for her in a really deep and meaningful way. Another thing I want to mention, though, like changing tracks a little bit, is why do men who lose a really nice, awesome first wife end up marrying a gross and mean second wife? Like, is that a trope? What is the name of that trope? I don't know what trope it is, but I don't like it.
Cinderella trope.
Just like I don't like the miscommunication trope. I don't know what trope this is.
I'm going to Google it.
Stepmom syndrome trope. I don't know. Evil stepmom trope. It's probably like a micro trope or something.
Because I don't think I've ever read a book where someone has remarried and their second spouse is like an actual decent person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just call it, it's a classic, deeply entrenched archetype in fairy tales. Okay. So they don't call it a trope. They call it like an archetype, but it's called the evil stepmother who's always manipulative, okay, so jealous. Like
the evil stepmom trope.
They build it in.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. It's just so wild to me. Like, and he clearly doesn't like her anymore, right? Like he clearly misses his wife, obviously. Like he keeps the rooms the same. Like she's not allowed to redecorate. He buys the same type of flowers for his wife. Like, you know, the trees are the same. But then he just lets this like mean lady. He just lets this mean lady like trample around and be a fucking menace. Like, why are you even bothering? What is the point? Why would you not just be single and let your kids be happy? I don't understand.
I don't know if you watched the new season of Bridgerton, but this trope is in the newest season of Bridgerton. And like, as soon as we started it, my mom was like, what is this, Cinderella? I mean, it literally is. Mm-hmm. But I still had the same thing throughout. I'm like, this woman is literally the worst person you could have ever chosen to marry. Why did you choose her? Mm-hmm. What made you pick her?
I would like to see in the rest of this story, the dad maybe not like distance himself too much more, because he does have other children now, right? Like he has other daughters who obviously like need a mom and like a stable household, right? Like Elspeth didn't have. But I would like to see him step up and be a better dad.
Well, thankfully, she's hopefully going to live with the Ewes, which even with how complicated all of that is, I feel like it's still going to be better than her upbringing with her dad. I think her aunt is a wonderful person who gave her the best childhood that she could.
I agree. So, like, just some food for thought. Once we get further in the book, I'll have more thoughts.
Mads, do you want to go next?
There was one quote I found funny just because it's very relatable to me right now. But it was someone telling Elspeth It won't always be so. Living like a hermit in your uncle's house is no sort of life for a young woman. The old witch has a point. And I said, whoa, why are we attacking the family expenses right now? Like, it's fine. If you want to be an independent lady, go for it. You don't need no smelly man.
Mm-mm.
But if his name is Raven Yu, then hear him out.
He's not smelly. I can tell you that.
I'm gonna save
that. Don't think his shit stinks, but it's fun.
I'm not 100% attached to him yet.
I know you're not. I can see it in your face.
I'm also not 100% attached because at first I was like, maybe he is a love interest, but it felt like very heavy. Like they were laid on thick. I was like, oh, so you are the love interest. I'm not mad about it, but I.
But is he?
I don't know. Maybe
that's what I like about him. He's easy to love.
Easy to
love. Even though he's a secret hiding man.
Secret hiding man that doesn't want to fake date her.
We'll get to that in a minute.
We'll get to my commentary
on this man.
I was about to say, I also have some Raven words, but I did call that he had the second nightmare card whenever he just like shooed Emery away. And Elspeth said, I rubbed my arm and watched him go, but Emery did not glance my way as if he'd already forgotten me. I was like, you have a card, my guy.
You guys definitely pay attention more than I do.
I blame Rebecca. I used to never think whenever I read, and then Fourth Wing happened, and I was like, I must think of everything. I hate that the watery babbles struck again, because the sentence is literally, Elspeth, a voice called. I knew that voice too well. The chill, haughty lit of Nerium's voice. My insides felt watery. I was like, bro, we can evolve. Whenever Elspeth first met everyone and it was describing everyone who was sat around the table and she was noting like, oh, those are Raven's parents. I was like, ooh, meeting the family already, I see. I'm intrigued. Let's keep going with that. So the part that I really didn't like Elm for was whenever they said like, okay, before we trust you, like, pick a card. And she picked Elm's card and like Elspeth was already kind of feeling the effects of it. And was getting like very giddy. And the nightmare says, darling, you can't make it so easy for him to control you. And the way I read it in my head of him being sassy, it reminded me of that audio on TikTok of the Cat in the Hat where he's like, honey, it was broken when she bought it. I'm just like, the nightmare's like, hun or darling, you can't let him just control you that easily. He's very sassy in my head. He's a sassy venom.
He is. But then at the same time, he like lets her fuck up first. And then he's like,
the fact
I could have helped you this whole time.
Yeah, he was like,
why didn't you say anything?
Actually, the cards don't work on me. And she's like, you didn't want to mention this for 11 years. And he's like, you didn't ask.
He's such an asshole.
I was like, what kind of friendship is this?
He's the best.
Oh
my gosh.
I was expecting him to pull a Zayden Ryerson and be like, you weren't asking the right questions.
He's bored.
He needs entertainment.
Yeah, that's fair.
He just has to fucking sit in her brain all day.
Yeah.
This is true. So the amount of times, listen, one thing that I started doing a lot whenever I'm reading in my Kindle, I dap up characters a lot. So there's like one part where they're like talking about having, it's like before Jesper says like, oh, Raven, you're going to court her. The part I highlighted was Spindle House is close by. Felix said, why not put her in her own family? Because Raven used the card and he was invisible. So he heard everything that her stepmom said. And Raven immediately shut that down. And I was like, my man daps up Raven. The amount of times whenever I was reading Teenage Rivalry, I was just like, daps up Ilya. Also just phrases in general, because another part is they're talking about like, oh, there'll be gossip, like you need time to court her, people need to see you. And then Raven's just like, trees. And I was like, what? Hello? And I was like, is that seriously a saying? I don't know if that bothered anyone else, but it bothered
me. He's a man of few words. It's not going to bother me because I'm deeply in love with this man.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Okay, because Raven said trees, but then further down, the prince says, by the bloody trees. I was like, now that's an expression. Raven, take notes.
Hold on, because I have something to say. Now, hear me out real quick. As you know me, I read for vibes. So the first line that caught my ear was, that's twice you've handed me my ass and ran away. Who said that? Raven. Daddy? As soon as I heard this line, I knew I was in love. That was my man. Would die for him, actually. Do I fully trust him? No. But do I love him? Yes. He's giving me the same vibes as Rassand. So once I heard his vibe, yes, not as regal, but he's giving me the same feeling where I was like, I don't know about you.
I can see that.
But I love a shadow daddy.
Because I literally have a note where I was like, Raven, you might be all right, kid.
So I heard the line, and the first thing I do is I run to Google to look up fan art.
Very brave.
To make sure the thoughts that I'm thinking are correct, and to make sure that he is the shadow daddy love interest of the series. The first image that pops up, I'm going to tag the person here. I'm going to show the image at booknuts_ on Instagram has this fan art. And as soon as I saw it, I knew I was correct in the feelings I have for this man. So here's every time Raven Yu made me audibly gasp in part one. Number one, obviously, that's twice you handed me my ass and ran away. Raven's finger on her lips to quiet her in the chambers. She parts her lips to breathe. His finger is still there. And because she parts her lips, he pulls his finger away, but then he looks down at her lips for a second. I gasped right there. Raven is invisible. This is when he has the mirror card that we just kind of chatted about. He witnesses her encounter with the evil stepmom. And while he's still invisible and she's having a moment after the evil stepmom walks away, he wipes away her tear with his knuckle, even though he's still in hiding.
Also, and then thank he's you like, for not licking it.
What?
Rhysand does that and so does Rowan.
Oh, yes. I was like, what do you mean? While he's invisible, he just licks her face. He still would have gasped. Jesper says, you should court her. Raven says, no, this is where I first gasped because I was like, bitch, what? He eventually says, if the ruse will help, I will try. This is my eye roll. Okay, not a gasp, but an eye roll. I was like, okay, bitch, whatever. When he comes out to explain this to her and he asks Elspeth if she agrees with the plan, she says, if the ruse will help, I will try, throwing the words back in his face. And what does he do? He looks at her lips. I gasped.
It was giving Elizabeth Bennet whenever Mr. Darcy was like, and what should someone do to encourage their partners? And she's like, dance, even if they are barely tolerable.
I love that line. And then he's like, she heard me. Ugh. He says, take my hand. We're meant to be courting when the step siblings are making their way over. I don't know why, but take my hand automatically. Gasped. Next, and actually this is probably the most important because I didn't gasp. I mean, I did, but I also screamed following. His hand pressed against the small of my back. Trust me, pretending is half the work. I don't trust you, Captain. How could I trust a man who hasn't been forthright with me? The dance slowed. Raven's hand slid from the small of my back up my spine slower than it should have. This is where I gasped. He leaned in, his jaw scraped against my ear, also where I gasped. I'd call an admission of treason exceptionally forthright for one day, Miss Spindle, he whispered. This is where I screamed. I am in love with this man. That is the only thing I have to comment on. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. 7 times I gasped for this man.
There's one time that you did not mention. I gasped. Maybe you didn't or you forgot about it.
I did start writing this later. Like once the fingers on her lips happened, that's when I started counting.
Oh, no, this one.
Because I was like, it's going to get good. Actually.
This would have fallen into that then.
What was that?
So the scene that I have highlighted, it's while he's using the mirror card. And Elm says, I need to be certain she's under my hand before we begin. Otherwise, there'll be holes in the influence. When I slapped myself a third time, Raven pushed away from the wall so abruptly the dogs leapt up with a snarl. Enough, he said, ice in his voice. That is where I gasped. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised you did not say that.
Yeah, I think that's just too hard for his heart. So,
but he's just a good person.
He's just a baby. I love him. I would die for him.
I would die for Riley. Wasn't expecting Raven be infected. That one did catch me off guard.
I did not see that coming either. I'm not going to lie to you. And here's a question I have, actually, about infection. Because we can see with Emery how bad it gets. Because he's young. At the beginning, they say, like, if you get infected, it's going to be fast. You're going to deteriorate. You're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that Raven and Elspeth are both infected, but they both, for the most part, seem to have their shit together? Like, yeah, they each have their own magic that comes with it. I mean, she has literally voices in her head. But, like, she's not out there acting absolutely bonkers like Emery. And I know each magic is different depending on the person, but it's a little weird that we know three infected people and two out of the three still act normal. I think we're being lied to.
We're 100% being lied to. Yes. I think most people in the castle are infected.
I did see that in your theory.
Because I think that everybody that is in the king's court is infected in some way. Because there is a quote that we're going into theory. So here we're starting. If I'm starting, I'm starting. I feel like even from the beginning, like everything that they're saying about the infected kind of was a weird yellow to reddish flag for me because it was so like serious. But then it didn't happen to Elspeth. So I was like, okay, either you're like the chosen one, right? And you're like the only one that can't get it.
Which is a trope.
It is a trope. Yeah. So I was like, okay, maybe we're going in that direction. But when we met the boys for the first time and they said that they have gray eyes, immediately I was like, no, there's something wrong with you. Even in fantasy land, even in all the fucking books, the yellow eyes mean something. And then they said that the other brother had it too. And I was like, no, something's wrong. This is not okay. So there's a red flag either way. And then the moment that it said that the younger brother was infected, I was like, nah, big brother's infected too. I felt it in my bones. The reason that I think that everybody that is in the king's court is also infected in a way is because when, like, towards the end of part one, when she finds out that he is infected and she's like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe the king would, like, keep you here and not, you know, sacrifice you. Mm-hmm. He says, you would be surprised by the counsel my uncle keeps. Mm-hmm. And that line stuck with me. So a theory that I have at this point in time, only reading one third of the book, is that the king is either trying to maybe harness whatever magic these people are getting, or if they're using magic and they receive magic and they're not deteriorating, using that magic gain to his own benefit, I think is a possibility, or something along those lines. I don't necessarily know why the little brother is deteriorating faster than the others. Everyone seems to have a different outcome. Maybe it's because he's so young. Maybe it's because he's not like admitting his magic enough. I know in a lot of fantasies, if you don't express the magic, then it builds up. So maybe that's the case. I don't know how often he touches people, right? Because if he touches someone, then he can read all the things about them. So how often is he touching them, or is he not touching anybody because he didn't want to like express the magic?
Locked him high in a tower, far, far away.
Literally, far, far away.
I have a question. Actually, maybe it may be more of a comment. But first, when they bring up Emery being infected and him keeping him around so that he can collect the 12 cards, because you need the blood of an infected for the 12 cards to work and the mist to go away, I was like, makes sense that he would keep him. But then he also keeps Raven, who is infected. So in my head, it's kind of like that meme where it's like, if I had two nickels,
literally,
which is not a lot, but it's kind of weird that it happened twice. Mm-hmm. How is there two people in his home that are infected that he is okay with keeping alive? For Emery, I understand, right? He's going to sacrifice him. He's going to sacrifice himself. But why is he keeping Raven?
I have two theories. I think in my mind, it could go two ways. The first way is that, because either way, we don't really know the king that well. If he is a traditional bad, morally dark king, right? I think he has no intention of clearing the mist. I think he has no intention of gathering the cards to lift any curses, because the curse gives him the opportunity to oppress the people. The curse gives him the opportunity to make sure no one is ever more powerful than he wants to be and or is. Part of me thinks that he's also infected, and whatever magic he was given, he is using. If he goes the other direction, maybe he's not planning to use the little brother as the pawn, right? Maybe he's trying to lift the curse in some sort of way, or keeping everyone in there to like just keep them safe and keep them protected. And maybe all of the children that supposedly died didn't really die. Maybe they're somewhere else.
Ooh, I did have a theory about that.
So where did they go?
They're in hiding.
So it was talking about how he had the scythe And the part I highlighted was Elspeth saying, I heard he was fond of executing criminals with his scythe, forcing them to do horrible things against their will. The High Prince would often call a great crowd at the edge of town. Then with three taps of his scythe card, he would send the accused without a charm to die in the mist, lost to the salt and ravenous hunger of the spirit of the woods. They go into the mist. They don't say whether or not the bodies are retrieved. So I'm like, what if he's killing them or controlling them, but telling them like, hey, if you go to, like, my house or my cousin's house, like, we're going to help you out. Because my cousin, he also infected. So that was one theory I had. Because, like, it never says that they retrieve the bodies or anything. It just says that he sends them out into the mist.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. That's a good theory. Y'all might be onto something.
This ain't our first rodeo.
Oh, well.
Also, do you guys think Emery died?
When?
At the very end. I mostly laughed because of what the nightmare said.
I was just starting to like him.
I know, and it reminded me of the sound where he's like, there's Melanie. That's the same. She was really nice.
Yes.
Where he's like, oh, I was just starting to like the kid. I was like, did Emery die? Because I was like, if he died, whenever the cards are united, they need someone with infected blood. I could see Ione. With her having the maiden card now, I feel like they might manipulate her, or she might just get so over Elspeth that she might pull a Galinda and be like, her sister, use her sister, and be like, you need an infected person? Go after my cousin. You can use her. And then Raven's going to have to come in and rescue her.
Yeah, that's possible.
True.
Because she's not important to the king.
I don't think they lose their mind,
but
they become disgusting.
That was it.
They become nasty.
Yes.
So on the inside, because they're pretty on the outside. Yeah.
That's fair. Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like when I was reading this, it gave the impression that there is a secret 13th card coming. Did I read that?
I don't think so.
Here's where I kind of had that thought. I said, Moret, you used the prophet card to see a shadowy figure in the woods where the guys attacked Elspeth and the shadow, and that they were being followed by 12 cards and by one with a 13th following a healthy Emery you. So, like, this was her vision that she saw.
I think it's saying that the shadow is being followed by 12 cards.
12, like, okay.
And then there's a 13th person
which
following
would be Raven.
That group. I think the shadow is Elspeth or Raven. The cards are lined up because they collected all the cards.
The shadow has to be Elspeth.
Yes. And then that would be Raven because it talks about, this is where I connect this, because I think it would be Raven because it talks about there are 12 black horse cards, but there are 13. He can't use the cards. He can't hold that 13th card. So there's 13 of them, but only 12 of them have cards. Just like
I can see that
for the guards.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how I was
reading
that.
And then healthy Emery. From what I understand, anyways, from the Book of Alders, all the cards are in place and each one was built or created because of the guy who wrote the book, where each and every one, he had to give something to get it. So I don't think there's any more cards. I think there are 12 of them, and then with their each number amount of them, and that's it.
Yeah. And then that leads me to another question that I had is because, so when she touched the nightmare card, right, way back when, Nightmare jumped in and like basically squatted rights, like squatter's rights in her mind. He just lives there now. Right. He never left. There's two nightmare cards. Someone used the other one on her, but she didn't touch it. So question number one, in the card that she touched, does the nightmare no longer work in that card? Does that card work? Has anyone used that specific card that her uncle had that the king now has?
See,
it hasn't been specified, but that's also a question I had because Raven has the other nightmare card and he can use it the way it's supposed to be used.
Correct.
So I don't think it affected his card.
Well, she didn't touch
that
card.
But I'm wondering... Right. I'm wondering if her card
is like null and void.
That she did touch, that the king now has, it might not work because she absorbed it.
Right. That's my question is like, is she absorbing it fully? And then my other question is, if she touches the second nightmare card that Raven does have, is there going to be another little buddy squatting in her mind? Are they going to have a friend? Like, these are my questions.
I don't think so.
Why is he only in one card?
Based on how it's written, I would think it would be the same voice in her head based on how the cards came to be and how each and every one that's created, they're exactly the same. So the card may give that power, but I think there's only one nightmare.
And then another question is there a maiden, right? Is there, if she touches other cards, mm-hmm. are there other characters that she can then communicate with and or like use power for?
I almost want her to touch more cards just to see.
I want to touch all the cards.
Voices show up in her head.
Literally. Touch them all.
Like the mirror grants you the ability to see the dead. So is she just going to be able to talk to the dead then? Or can they just pop into her mind whenever she wants? That's my dad.
Oh my God, you did that one already.
I know, but you can't say his quote without mentioning him.
It's from a movie.
I know, that's why he says it all the time.
No one knows your
dad. That is his life living quote. Everybody knows my dad.
Final thought theory that I have. I don't have a guest, but I know that somebody in my heart, I know somebody from the inner circle, we'll call them the stellar people. Someone's going to betray. Someone is going to do something bad. They're all too openly willing to meet Elspeth. Even though they like interrogated her, they're mm-hmm. all very like, okay, like she can just come in. Let's take her here. Let's talk to her. Let's meet everybody. Like it all happened a little too quickly for me. And I think somebody is going to take advantage of that. I don't have a guess on who. I'll let you know in the next episode if I have a guess.
I think the easy answer of a guess would be Elm, but I feel like that's too easy of a guess.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not going to be him.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's going to become like a Lucian kind of deal for me, where like I'm going to love him.
Watch it be Raven.
I don't know. Ugh, don't say that. Not my baby.
It might be.
It's not.
There's two books.
I can promise you. I promise
you. What a cliffhanger that would be. I'm going to throw it out there just because I kind of want it to happen.
I think, what if it's Jesper? She seems too trusting.
Don't put that out there. I like her.
It's kind of the more vibe. Like, oh, she's going to be my best friend. She's going to help me out. I think you're hiding.
I was saying, what if Hoth is actually helping people? And later Elm, who was invited back with Raven & Co. and introduced, like, what if he's the real bad guy and will put Elspeth in danger, causing, I'm assuming, Raven to have to rescue her. And then Elm might kill the king or Hoth. And it reminded me of another book that I'm not going to say because that would be a spoiler. But
I think Hoth is just evil. I think he is our...
But if he's sending people to the mist?
I don't know. I think he is our evil person.
I don't know yet. I'm not sure who it is. I don't think Raven will have to save her, though, because she has the nightmare.
True. Mm. Well, you got to have the love interest.
Yeah. It's,
honestly, at this point...
I think she'll have to save him.
When I started this book, I did not think it was romanticy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was fantasy. So I'm almost wondering if it's going to even follow the tropes of romanticy.
It
I think
not.
I'm getting too excited about it. And that's why I'm like, ugh, I love him, but I don't know if it's going to be what I'm expecting. It probably won't be.
Yeah. I don't know.
So
that's all I got, though. So far, I like it. I'm letting it all sink in.
I like it a lot. It's a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely took me a few times looking through it to understand, especially us being introduced to all of the cards, all of these people, all of these places. Mm-hmm. The foundation is out there, but I'm a little sus moving forward. Mm-hmm. So
I'm here for
it. I might have a random theory that's a really big stretch.
Throw it in.
It's probably going to be wrong, but it got me thinking. There's one quote where it's the nightmare talking, and he says, "There was once a girl, clever and good, who tarried in shadow in the depths of the wood. There also was a king, a shepherd by his crook, who reigned over the magic and wrote the old book. The two were together, so the two were the same, the girl, the king, and the monster they became." So I was like, so is Venom the Alder King? Because there was also that point where she was dreaming and then she stumbled upon a literal person and he was shocked. And then at another point, I thought it might have been the Rowan King and she like somehow like they mind linked. But then I was like, but that doesn't make sense because it's still like from the nightmare's perspective and he's just like, what do you want? But I was like, maybe Venom is the Alder King.
So if that's the case, the quote says what the nightmare they became, right? So
the monster they became.
Or the monster they became. So if there's two nightmare cars, and when she touched the first one, she got nightmare. What if when she touches the second one, she gets Lady Nightmare? Lady Venom.
But I don't... I can't remember if I highlighted it or if Cass said it, but it was... Oh my gosh. I think it was like the the person who wrote the book, which was the Alder King, was saying how he can't use the cards. Because then I was saying, if the cards don't affect the nightmare, then that also further proves my point that the nightmare could be the king.
I think you're right.
That's my hot take.
Those are our thoughts. Thank you for hanging out with the Goodish Book Club. Rate us. Tell us if you like us.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.